Okay, even though she's live in the United Kingdom, we will have now conversations with Linda. Your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, didn't Whitley Strieber say that when he was in a crop formation, he got sick, he didn't feel well?
Right. It was one in Texas about 10 years or 12 years ago, and he told me about it. And there are probably more physical bad effects in crop formations than joy and a kind of elation. I've felt them both. And when you talk with somebody in the medical community or a biophysicist like W.C. Levengood and you say, why would there suddenly be headaches or nausea or dizziness and the batteries in cameras that suddenly fail and people can literally take their camera from inside of a crop formation where it's not functioning, they walk out and right outside of the formation, the camera will work. They can walk into the formation, the camera will not work. So it's very specific to the pattern. And the biophysicist's answer is that if you have a spinning plasma which are ions, it can interact with magnetic fields. And we know that we're subject to magnetic fields as creatures living on the surface of this earth because we don't see them. Often people do not realize that there could be a cause and effect between magnetic disturbance right in and around the crop formation and impact on health. It doesn't mean that there is a negative intent of the crop formation. It means that the physical evidence of magnetic field anomalies and perhaps these other energy residues interact with us as life forms. And it, again, reinforces this is hard physical evidence that has been associated with crop formations now for more than two decades that has absolutely nothing to do with boards and string. It has to do with impacts in the magnetic field.
What do you think about the possibility that this planet is alive, it has consciousness, and this is its way of trying to communicate with us?
Long shot. It doesn't ring over all of the years. I think we are dealing with profound intelligence, and it is such a good question, Georgia, that you're raising source, because now in July of 2009, about to go into August, it's very clear that all of the public now is being exposed to discussions about time travelers, other dimensions, that we are beginning to expand our view of the playing board here. It doesn't have to be simply extraterrestrial biological entities from a solar system somewhere in this galaxy or another. That used to be the only interpretation. Now I think Wynn Keach's infrared, it is so anomalous, and you have looked at that one, which is just such a short piece of hours of his video, mm-hmm. and that to know that it's infrared. And would you say, George, you should give me your reaction upon seeing that video for the first time?
Well, it was weird. I mean, you saw the burst of light, and then the creatures, like you said, little legs.
Right.
And then it kind of like disappeared, or it kind of, you know, morphed itself back into the background. But it was strange.
And the dissipation, I don't know what other verb to use. It is almost as if it evaporates in the air.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, speaking of getting sick, I've got tomorrow, my first hour guest is Benjamin Krem, and he's the representative for the Maitreya, whom some people say is the Antichrist. When he was on with me a few years ago, Linda, people got sick, physically sick now, when he was talking.
For heaven's sake.
I mean, I was getting messages from people who were getting nauseous and everything.
Why are you having him on?
I don't know. I want to see if it's real or not, I guess.
Well, we do know what you've just said underscores that we are on an earth that we're used to looking at XYZ axis and seeing with our eyes. It is so underscored when you come to the crop formation phenomenon. That what we see with our eyes, invisible light, is such a tiny fraction of what is actually happening. And when you begin to study the wide range of infrared, I have had a discussion with a producer of infrared equipment for the Defense Department, and he was telling me that depending upon the very specific range of frequencies that the DOD wants, that they may have to make a special camera. You cannot just go and buy a camera that shows you all the ranges in infrared. It doesn't work that way. And DOD may have a dozen infrared cameras. Imagine what is happening at frequencies that we are never seeing, but that can be around us at all times. And that video that I sent to Lex to put up from Winston, and I have a series at Earth Files, shows and underscores that infrared was capturing very bright, intense heat associated with that light, and something that, as you yourself, it looks like it has legs.
Yeah.
And that it moves forward. There's definitely a forward motion and then the dissipation, and you're left with that feeling that is still somewhere out in Knapp Hill and East Field.
Is everybody still in the room there with you, or have they all departed?
The Andrew and Paul have gone to see if they can get into Hackpen Hill while it's fresh. We are racing to formations because the farmers this year are hugely aggressive.
I don't blame them.
In a way.
This is their livelihood. They make money on their crops. And, you know, if they're getting knocked down by whatever source, I mean, I'm sure they're upset.
But Lucy has left to meet the farmer who has been so angry at Ogborn. When Jill and I went in, we did not know the farmer was angry. We knew nothing. We went and we followed protocol. You stay on the tram lines. You go into the pattern. Well, Lucy called the farmer. She knew who he was, and she said, I wanted to do my water experiments. Would you let me in? So she's taken off to go with the farmer who was angry, and he's going to let her bury bottles. He's not going to take Ogburn, that's the 12-arm, down.
She's pretty bold. She's bold, huh?
Well, he's now cooperating with Lucy, and that's one of the values of some of us who have some long-term relationships with people. And in her case, they understand she is trying to do some scientific work. So he's going to cooperate with her. And then we are all, the whole group from this morning, we're going to meet at a White Horse Inn and have a late lunch. And we'll catch up on what Lucy's experience was, on Andrew and Paul out at Hackpen Hill, the camera crew on the documentary, Charles Mallett. We're all going to have lunch. So it will be a very interesting discussion.
Well, you thank them for being on the program.
I will.
And we'll go to calls. And, of course, my little pun of the night, if Lucy gets beamed aboard a craft, I guess you could say she's Lucy in the sky?
I'll tell her at lunch.
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
The Beatles would love that.
Hello, Andy, east of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, Linda. Hi, this is Andy from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Sure thing.
Hi.
Yes, in Gordon Michael Scallion's book, Notes from the Cosmos, he goes into great detail who the crop circle makers are. He calls them the Aetherians, and they are actually people who exist in the fifth realm of Earth's, of the Earth, actually, a shadow Earth, and that they operate or they work in conjunction with the Pleiadians to create these spheres out of material from the atmosphere using microwave energy and plasma.
Andy,
so that's
the,
yes.
The one thing about Mr. Scallion is that there have been all kinds of perceptions over the years that have not panned out, and you have to say that this is his speculation. There's a huge range of speculation about what is behind the phenomenon, but is there a single human on Earth that actually knows? I don't think so. I think that the very fact that the phenomena that some of us have encountered in the dark and in the sun that seems to have a palpable feeling, a profound intelligence to it, is something that might be unknowable to human life in the way we would like to sit down over coffee with extraterrestrials, time travelers, other dimensional beings, and say, please, teach us, tell us about your experiences and where you come from. I think we are dealing with phenomena that cannot do that, and that the crop formations themselves might be just a residue of technologies that are being used, let's say, to gauge efforts to affect timelines. We are left in awe, and they know that. And there's no question that the intelligence behind formations interacts with the human minds, sometimes seems to even play in a kind of playful way. And that, in and of itself, we try to anthropomorphize from a human mind looking at humans. But my experience with what I have encountered over the last 20 years is it is an energy and an intelligence that I do not think has anything to do with the Earth and humans as we are living now. Where it comes from and why, that's the intriguing question. And if, as has been suggested by many people at different times in the phenomena, that we might actually be dealing with time travelers, that moves this into another level of a 3 to 6 level chess game that is really, truly beyond our comprehension until something forces the hand of something that might be in the future coming back and using genetic material, using the surface life of the Earth for an unimaginable challenge in the future where perhaps life is not guaranteed. And that has always been a sense that those of us who have been here for many years off and on, there always was that sense in the first formations I went into that I was dealing with something that had to do with survival, our survival, its survival, and that's what is really unclear. What kind of future may we be headed into, and is something trying to change timelines? I find that fascinating to contemplate, but George, would you not agree that that is one of the most difficult subjects because we are so used to living in an XYZ matter world?
Absolutely. Allentown, Pennsylvania, we go. Laura, it's your turn.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I like what you just said, Linda, about something trying to change our timeline, possibly. But I wanted to ask you this. I read somewhere a couple of years ago that there was a crop circle, and it said that it was in the shape of a famous cartoon pig, but it didn't identify, you know, which famous cartoon pig it was.
And well, that sounds like one of the hoaxer's jokes.
Well, I don't. It was a serious article. It was a very serious article, and I was just wondering, you know, if it were true, the only cartoon pig that I could think of is Porky, and he's famous for saying "That's all, folks." And I had also read, or actually seen a picture. Yeah, I don't mean to get too spooky here, but I had also seen a picture of another crop circle that showed the solar system, and it. Instead of having a circle where Earth should be, it was just an empty orbit.
Right. And that was, without doubt, one of the most sobering formations of all time. I can remember a phone conversation with a colleague in England when that solar system came, and we are all staring at what should have been the third ring with a planet while all the other planets were there, and that third ring was empty.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can then jump from the pattern itself and say something is trying to tell us that perhaps the Earth is headed towards some kind of a disaster. It can also be, and this is where I always hold a space in my mind, that we should not always be doom and gloom and catastrophe, that if we are dealing with forces that may actually be trying to survive themselves, our survival may be intimate to theirs. And if they are profoundly intelligent, that maybe what is occurring, we may never precisely know that something succeeded and the Earth will continue to keep evolving, the sun will rise and fall. There will be meteorite strikes, and perhaps we will finally have governments who will level with us that we're not alone in the universe and that there are other life forms. and that the Earth will have a future that is more honest and straightforward than it has certainly been for the last 5,000 years of all kinds of manipulation. If not, if there is catastrophe and destruction in our future, it would seem to me to signal that something failed in the efforts of that intelligence. And I would like to think that the beauty and the precision and the mystery of the truly great formations always give me hope that there is something out there that is our ally, that living life has a serious ally from the highest force to intelligences that may have their own stake in survival, and that they are working on our behalf and their behalf. And as long as you hold that space, you can't see any of this as catastrophic and negative.
Why do they create these symbols, Linda? Why not just spell it out there for us?
Well, this has been a very significant 12-month period from July of 2008 when Mike Reed, the retired physicist from Arizona State University, recognized pi to 9 digits in Barbary Castle again, and how it was defined by horizontal flat lines with very specific ratchets. And that began an arc, you might say, into the 2009 season when Mike Reed and the Australian physicist who request anonymity, they began realizing that from April 14th on, with the very first oilseed rape pattern at the Ridgeway near Avebury, that they were beginning to see patterns that all seemed to focus on lunar and solar cycles, not interpretive. This was quite specific. And that by July, that fifth to seventh period, when they had been seeing the sevens, the July, the lunar, solar, and for 2 months at Earth Files, I had been reporting what they as scientists were seeing in patterns developing up to what they thought would be a solar flare from our sun that has been abnormally quiet for 3 years, that there would be on July 7th a release of energy that might be a coronal mass ejection. Why and all of that? They said maybe something is trying to teach us to see the crop formations as a place where there can be communication about our Earth and our solar system. And what happened? We get to July 5 to July 7, and here come these two enormous sunspots out of a completely naked, quiet sun, each sunspot the diameter of the Earth, the diameter of the Earth, two Earths making up a sunspot twin. And within these 48 hours between July 5th and July 7th, that sun, those two sunspots had grown to sunspots the size of Jupiter on the sun. It's sunspot 1024. And when 1024 went around the limb of the sun orbiting, it was so strong that it will come back around this time.
We'll be back with final phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, of course, Friday into Saturday morning open lines, but also an interview with Benjamin Krem, representative for the Maitreya. Linda, when do you come back to the States?
The 11th of August, and I'm going to be able to see the Australian scientist here this coming week. He's coming from Australia, and he's going to stay long enough to get through August 15th because this goes back quite a ways, maybe 5 years ago, 3 years ago, that he saw in the crop formations this issue of why certain patterns and where they are in latitude and longitudes and orientations on the horizon and all of that. In fact, all of what I'm saying right now was at Earth Files at least 3 years ago. About August 9th, 2009, or thereabouts, days on either side of the 9th, might be an event. Now, what it would be, None of us know, but there has been quite a gathering of people because of this sense that maybe something really significant is going to happen in August of 2009. Well, I'll be here at least to the 11th, and you're fighting the ability to get out of Europe in August. That's what forced that day on me. You can't always get flights when you want them, so I'll be back August 11th. He's going to stay longer. I'll get back and stay in touch with him, and I'll be reporting at Earth Files. And in my next coast, what happened in August in Wiltshire?
Can you believe we're going into August already?
I know. It is the fastest year I think I've ever experienced.
Yeah, it is. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Carmel, Indiana. Barbara, east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, it's nice to speak with you both.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, and I'm not, I'm ill. I have fibromyalgia.
Okay.
Excuse me, I'm nervous. And I was just wondering, since Linda does have some experiments on being healed, I was just wondering if I could be a part of that sometime.
Oh, Lucy Pringle, the woman I was interviewing in the last half hour of interviews, she has purposefully done research here. I've been out in the fields when she has been experimenting with medical people and people in crops. So it is Lucy Pringle who has done the most investigation that I know of the impact of crop formations on people. I have worked with a biophysicist on the changes in soil and plants. They are kind of flip sides of the same coin. Whatever is affecting the plants and the soil is probably what is causing the effects in people. And Lucy was suggesting that there have been spontaneous healings in crop formations. They've been reported periodically over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. Why some people react in the presence of certain energy fields with a change in their nervous system or their muscles or whatever it is, that's part of the mystery. I'm sorry to hear that you have fibromyalgia, which I understand affects muscles.
Yes.
And if we had the ability to say you could go to X town and X field and there would be a formation with the right energy for you to go into, wouldn't it be wonderful? But it doesn't happen that way. Crop formations with the intense energy, the intense energy only lasts even measurably for about, at the most, 72 hours.
Uh-huh.
So you would have to be where the crop formation occurs. I've been in hundreds, and I have felt the kind of exhilaration that you just feel like you are united somehow with the force of life itself. Those are the formations that people hear about the most, and they come when they come, and if you're lucky enough to be in them, you might have this restorative, rejuvenating experience. Unfortunately, we can't control it.
You can't say when your next one is?
No, nobody knows. They just come by whatever is the force that produces them, and most of them are in England. But I think it's important in the context of these 3 hours to also stress crop formations in 1990, for example, and 91. They were being reported in 23 countries around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Complex crop formations were reported in wet rice paddies in Japan. They have been found in grassy plains in Australia. So we're talking about a phenomenon that affects both hemispheres, has for a very long time, covers the world. And Doug and Dave and the so-called hoaxers now, they are not flying around the world in jets making crop formations.
Okay, next up we go to Santa Barbara, California, west of the Rockies. Pasquale. Hi there.
Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Linda, I've been looking forward to talking to you for years. I've heard you so many times. Thanks for all the great work that you're doing.
I really thank you for appreciating it.
I was born in Philadelphia, and every year I go back to visit my parents. And one year, I'm a Buddhist, and I go to this Philadelphia Buddhist group. I think they were sitting at Haverford College, and after the meeting, two people there were talking, and they were talking about a crop circle that was on a farm near where they were living. I think it took us about an hour or so to drive up there, and the moon was out, and they let me walk ahead, and it was pretty visible. It wasn't real dark. I don't know if it was a full moon, but I'm walking up over this hill. The crop circle that they said was already there was probably 100 yards. And then all of a sudden, there was this wind started moving, and it got brighter. And I heard this humming sound, and the grain, I can't remember if it was wheat or what, it started moving. And I looked up, and there was this ship about 40 to 50 feet up, which became what I believe was partially visible, and it disappeared in about 3 or 4 seconds, and it was a very unpleasant feeling. And the crop circle started forming. I was hoping they would have turned it off because I got pretty scared. But it started moving in a clockwise manner, and it went down in, I think, less than a minute. And I looked pretty close. It was a pretty strong energy, and there was also an odor, but it's been so long I can't remember the odor, but I remembered us remarking there was an odor that lasted for 3 or 4 minutes.
What were you seeing in the sky above where the formation formed?
Well, I remember real clearly that it was about 40 to 50 feet or closer. It wasn't far, but it was almost like a parallelogram. It looked like metal. And I don't think I saw the whole thing, but it came into vision, and then it dissolved. I looked up there because I think the humming came from there. And the wind was what got me first. The wind started moving first.
And that has been reported in so many cases in the UFO literature of air or trees moving without wind in some cases, and a big silver disc has appeared that would explain why the trees would be thrashing around, but it sounds to me like you may be one of the few eyewitnesses who has ever seen what appeared to be something. Was it disc-shaped?
What I saw was not disc-shaped, but I don't think I saw the whole craft.
When you said parallelogram, you meant it was sort of rectangular?
It was kind of the part that I saw was almost like what I took to be like a bay that could open, like two doors that would open,
right,
and a protrusion on the bottom, and I saw that real clearly. But I'd say, honestly speaking, the thing was in the sky for about 5 seconds, and I don't think it took off. I think it just dissolved somehow from our field of vision.
Right. This whole issue of dissipation, is it because there is a technology that can deflect photons or do something in which that is still there, the entity at Nap Hill that seems to dissipate on that infrared? Where is the dissipation going? Is it dissipating into another infrared frequency that even that camera was not prepared to see? Is the craft itself deflecting photons from your eyes, reaching your eyes by a technology that then it seems to disappear? Those are the important questions I wish I had absolute answers to, but this dissipation dissolving phenomenon is so common, and it sounds like you're making a direct association with the appearance of the aerial object on a very sudden swirling of, was it wheat? Was it grass?
And Linda, also let me ask you, we got to take some more calls before.
Okay,
this
is fascinating. I hope you will email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com and I'll follow up with you more.
Have you ever run across Ed Grimsley?
He is the fellow
with the night vision goggles.
Oregon or someplace, and he's working in Starscope, which is image enhancement, not infrared.
Yep. And he's got these third generation night vision goggles. And I looked through them one night and saw two strange UFOs, who knows what they were, darting all over the place. truly unbelievable.
And that's the Starscope enhancement, is where starlight is being used to basically brighten the dark so you can see them.
Next up, we go to Anaheim, California. Hello, Billy. You're up with us.
Hello, George.
Hi.
And Linda, listen, those arms that you see in that circle, those are the 12 arms of Jacob. They are finished. They have picked up their people. They have cleaned them up. They have them ready. And you wait and see at about, well, maybe in a week or so, you're going to see people disappearing out of this earth. They're going to pick up their own. And then this earth is going to, they're going to have all kinds of turmoil. And it's going to start here in California. And George, I was going to tell you, you know that UFO they saw over Chicago O'Hara?
Yeah, the one that looked like it went through the donut of the cloud.
They told me they were following a suitcase nuke. The people got off at Chicago, and they sit up there and waited to see what plane they took. And they're following those nukes. They're not going to let those nukes get they're not going to let them blow up anybody.
No, I don't think they had any. But, hey, thanks, Billy, for the call. Michael in Miami, Florida, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi, Michael.
How you doing, George? How are you? Hi,
good.
Linda.
Hi.
How are you guys? Linda, you have touched so many subjects that right now I just don't know what to speak about. But I can honestly tell you that I've seen them. I've seen them from a distance. I've seen them up close.
Which? What have you seen?
I've seen what they call the grays.
With the big black slanted eyes.
Yes, I've seen them. I've seen their craft, but it was nighttime, so all I can see was, like, the lights.
They aren't the only game in town, but what is your interaction with them?
Ever since, like, my first encounter, I've never cared about being so curious about that. As far as I'm concerned, God made the universe, and we're all in it. We shouldn't allow them to take up so much of our time and energy. Obviously, they care about this planet, and they have technologies beyond our understanding.
Right.
I strongly believe that the oil is the Earth's blood. It's been so fast, and everything on Earth requires lubrication. I mean, why wouldn't the Earth require lubrication? It's spinning so fast. It keeps it cool.
I think you're right about that. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have theorized that as we take more and more oil out of the Earth, that's why we get more earthquakes, Linda.
Yeah, well, that is just sheer physics.
Yep.
You can't displace volume in rock and soil without it then being unstable. And the more oil we've taken out, there's no question we've caused a seismic event.
The feelings that you have when you're in the middle of a crop formation, do you feel this energy there?
Oh absolutely. It's palpable. It's extraordinary and in many ways unique. It's almost like a kind of physical tingling or buzz. It is. You can enter crop formations, and from stepping your first step in, you feel an energy that is not, you can step out of it. I've done that. You can step into it and step out of it, which would explain why people can step into a crop formation, their batteries and their cameras fail, they walk out, everything works. And they have done this where they walk in and out, just curious about how specific, how formation specific. So the energy that I feel and that others feel and that affects equipment and animals and people and so forth, it is either a residue from what made the formation, or it is deliberately energy that is there for some reason for some period of time. And when you're in that energy, that is the exhilarating one, it affects you for hours and days. You are moved into a space of the most positive well-being, and you think, if the whole world could experience this, so much of the war and fighting and the negativity would just go away. And that is, to me, one of the most positive aspects of crop formations. Those of us who have come so many times to study and be in them, we know that that is one of the residues of being around crop formations. It can be so highly positive, and in a way, changes you probably forever. And from my point of view, it's all been positive.
Okay, let's go to Vancouver, British Columbia. Ryan, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Linda. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Sure.
George, it was great to meet you when you came up here.
Absolutely. I had a great time. I think we're going to do it again next year, too.
Fantastic. It'll be great to have you back. I just wanted to, I guess, comment on the proton deflection that Linda was talking
right.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And
a photon.
Photon, sorry.
Photon, not proton. Photon.
And my own experiences, my own sightings, it really seems to depend on the angle at which you're looking at it, just like the two fellows that were talking in the photos that were on right. online as to how you can see it and you know, what perception that you have on it.
Well, and the interesting thing is, why would Paul's mind and eye and retina have continued to function absolutely uninterrupted? He was able to videotape all of this. He was able to see it. And yet Andrew is suddenly blanked from seeing a craft to which he is the very closest. Was it a protection move on the part of the craft to disappear from him so that he would not get in harm's way in relationship to the craft? He was very close. And that is one of the questions we can't answer. Or was there another reason to basically demonstrate that the intelligence or whatever was in this silver thing knew that Paul was videotaping everything? And it was Andrew who is free moving. Maybe the intelligence decided, well, here is a very good opportunity to show that the videotape will show us, but the human walking around in the field cannot see us because we have deliberately deflected the photons from our craft so they will not reach his retina. That is one of the clearest physical demonstrations that I know of that has record behind it in the videotape.
Travel safe, Linda. Linda Moulton Howe, live for us in the United Kingdom. She's not too far from CERN in Switzerland, which is supposed to go online in a few more months. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.